today's Clue and Internet Seminar, which will cover Brownfield's Area-Wide Planning Federal Resources 2012 Update. Today's seminar has actually been sponsored by the EPA's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization, I believe that's the correct acronym. And you'll be hearing from a number of individuals as part of that group today. My name, though, is Susan Bell, and I work as part of the Superfund program. I'll be helping to moderate today's session. I'm going to cover a couple of housekeeping items and instructions before we officially begin the presentation. But just a reminder for those of you who are participating for the first time with a CLUE seminar, today's seminar is going to function very similar to a conference call. You'll need to have a copy of the presentation materials available to you. And when you registered, you would have been directed to a seminar homepage. And on that seminar homepage, it's probably the same link you used to sign up for today's session. That description of our presentation, it listed the instructors or their contact info. There were also links at the bottom to download the presentation. You could also follow a button that appears on the right side that says, or probably on the left side that says Go to Seminar. So if you click that button, they'll actually pull up the slides in the web browser window. Or alternatively, again, you can use the links on the bottom to download as PowerPoint or PDF. But I would ask that everybody who's got the presentation materials in front of them and move on to the title slide, which is slide number one, on to slide number two, which is our housekeeping item. Another important thing that I'm going to call out to you as well, the presenters will be referring to and asking for input on a file that we have posted on the links page for today's event. So again, on that same seminar homepage, you'll find a button on the left side that says links. You'll also find links to additional resources at the bottom of that page. And there is an Excel file, which is one of the resources you can download at a Brownfield resource tool. They're going to recommend that you download that and have that available. If you have a print copy or not at a computer with internet access, that's certainly okay. You can refer to it later on. But for those of you who can pull it up, we would remind you. We'll also close out the seminar and remind you how to access that file if you want to provide feedback afterwards. So again, those of you who are on the phone line, I just want to remind you that you keep your phone on mute for the seminar unless you have a question. So we would ask you to hit your mute button now or simply hit *6 to mute your line. You are welcome to take yourself off of mute to ask questions at any point during the presentation. And in order to take yourself off of mute, you can use your own unmute button or hit *6. So *6 to mute, *6 to unmute. And then after you ask your question, we'd ask you to re-mute so there won't be disruptions. Also, don't put the call on hold. There could be background music or commercials that would be disruptive. We would simply ask that if you need to, you can hang up and call back in. There won't be any tones or entry announcements that will be a disruption. So simply keep this on mute or hang up if you need to disconnect. Those of you who are streaming the audio online, again, you'll be looking at the slides through a web browser format. And in order to navigate through the slides, you won't necessarily be turning the page manually. You'll be looking at them in a web browser, and you'll see a series of numbered links that appear on the left-hand side. Our presenters will be announcing as they move through the materials, and again, just like the conference call, you'll simply turn the page to follow along. So again, I'm on slide number two, covering housekeeping items. You can use the numbered links that appear on the left side to jump through the materials, add verbal cues from our speakers, or alternatively, you can use the buttons or icons that appear at the top of the slide. The single arrow pointing to the right will move you forward one slide. The single arrow pointing to the left will move you backwards one slide. The icon at the very top of it is shaped like a house. At the top of those slides will also open up the seminar homepage where you can find the links page and also download that other file that I mentioned, which will be discussed later on in today's presentation. And again, for those of you who are streaming the audio online, you won't have a chance to ask questions out loud, but you are welcome to type up your questions and submit them electronically, and then I will ask them out loud on your behalf. So if you want to type up or submit an electronic question, the question mark icon that appears at the top of your slide, as long as your pop-up blockers have been disabled, a new window will open up which will allow you to type up your questions and comments. And then again, I'll read them out loud on your behalf. So there's no designated Q&A period. You don't have to wait for the presentation's over. We would encourage you to type up your comments and questions as soon as they occur to you so that we can bring them up throughout today's session. Again, this is one final reminder that there will be a file that the instructors will be covering and will be referencing and getting feedback on as a result of today's session. So if you can, we'd ask everyone to take a look at the link page, which is available on the seminar homepage. You'll see a link or a button for it on the left side. And there's a Brownfield resource tool that you can download as an Excel file that they'd ask you to have available and take a look at. We included that link in the reminder email that went out today. The final other note is that the session will be recorded. I was going to let everybody know that that archive may be made available depending on the instructor's preferences. Within a few weeks, and if that is available, you'll get an automatic email letting me know how to access it. So those are the end of the official reminders that I have for today. So with that, I'm going to ask everybody to move along to slide number 3, which is the start of the official presentation materials for today's session. And before Charlie Bush is coming again with EPA as part of the Senior Advisor for Economic Development here, we're going to have Amy Storm have some opening comments as the WP Program Coordinator. So again, Amy, on slide number 3, go right ahead.
Thanks, Jean. Hi, everyone. We want to welcome you to today's webinar. Thank you for joining us. I just wanted to say a couple things before Charlie gets started. We're really pleased to have Charlie back with us to do this update briefing on federal resources. Many of you were probably with us last March when he went through a lot of the resources that are available and should be ones that you're considering as you move forward on your brownfields area-wide planning projects, and particularly now as you're thinking through implementation strategies. So we felt that it would be useful to revisit a lot of those resources now that federal budgets are out, and Charlie can give us the picture of what that picture looks like for 2012. So this is just a two-part webinar, and we really only have about an hour today. He'll be moving through most of the slides that are on your presentation, and then about halfway through, we're going to talk to you about this spreadsheet tool that Jean mentioned, and we want to show that to you. We'll be doing that with the help of Clark Henry from SRA, who's a contractor here for EPA. We're trying to basically take the information on what types of federal resources are available and make that in an easily accessible and sortable format so you can start finding resources that might match what you're looking for. And so we'll walk you through that, but then we really do want your feedback on what's going to be most useful to you. So that's the structure of the day, and I will turn it over to Charlie.
Well, thank you, Amy, and I'd like to welcome everyone as well. This webinar really continues our focus on implementation, you know, in the context of the area-wide planning projects. As Amy mentioned on the last call, implementation, you know, leading out of the area-wide planning process is one of our Assistant Administrator Maddie Stanislaus's top priorities. And so, you know, we really want to do what we can to provide you information that will help you along that path. For the purposes of this webinar, we've been tracking resource options for fiscal year 2012. The budgets, the appropriations were approved at the very end of last year. The report language, the numbers are just working their way into the agencies. And what I want to do is run through them program by program, along with any sort of wrinkles or facts that you should know as you're thinking about, you know, whether or not you may want to access these programs and whether or not they might, you know, fit some of the project ideas you've identified. I want to mention that the numbers that are in this webinar, all the information comes directly from the appropriation bills that passed and also from the supporting congressional reports. For purposes of this webinar, we really focused on six agencies, but I want to mention, you know, right away up front that if any of you have, you know, interest in other programs, you've heard about other opportunities, we are happy to track down that information and get it to you to help you start that process. But we're focusing on six. And also, as Jean mentioned, we'll be happy to take questions along the way. So with that, if we can go to the next slide, I just want to focus on these six agencies, you know, EPA, HUD, and DOT, which are the Partnership for Sustainable Communities agencies, and also on EDA and USDA, which have really been key players in so many brownfield projects. And then I want to wrap up with a little bit of mention of SBA and a couple of others who, I guess in my own mind, are sort of the stealth brownfield resources. They have a lot of potential applicability and certainly a lot of resources, and I think you may want to just know about them because it may just be useful for you at some point in your process. So if we can go to the next slide, what I'm going to do is, because this is recorded and then this is going to be posted, I wanted to give some background information to go with these programs. I'm not going to go through all this, especially with the EPA brownfield assessment, cleanup, and RLF capitalization grants, which I know many of you know and love out there. But I will say that those grants can be used for a range of, you know, inventorying, prioritizing, assessing, cleanup, and linked redevelopment planning. Of course, the area-wide planning, pilots themselves, and then the next round that'll be done in FY12 come out of this. And of course, the key out of this is some of the cleanup and RLF money, where you can really kind of go ahead and move from assessment into cleanup and get ready for next use. If we go to the next slide, I want to focus really on some of the funding issues. I mean, it probably comes as no surprise to many of you out there that the competition for this funding is tight, and it has been tight for a number of years. We get so many good applications that are just top-notch, and really our funding, constraints really mean in practice that we can only put about 1 in 3 successful, we can only fund about 1 in 3 applications. So, again, something to remember as you're putting that together. And also we know for some of the smaller jurisdictions, the fact that there's a limit on administrative cost uses can inhibit, especially small nonprofits that have little capacity to manage a grant. We wanted to let you know that for the next funding round, there is going to be even greater emphasis on implementation and leveraging commitments. You know that because Amy and I have really been pounding on this, but for the next round in general, there is going to be more focus on implementation. We also know from past experience that the fact that you need to go for an assessment grant at one point and then go for a cleanup grant later, and the timing involved with all that can, cause some timing issues. We also want to mention that, the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant Program, which is run through the Office of Brownfield, there's a lot of potential links to the brownfield area-wide planning. We really urge you to take a look at that because this year, what is considered environmental in the context of that program has really been broadened to go beyond just cleanup training to also look at things like, training for activities associated with green infrastructure, green buildings. So it may have more usefulness to you as you're thinking about this. And now to just get down to the funding piece, Congress provided the program $95 million for fiscal year 2012. These are for, our basic program, the grants for assessment, cleanup, and RLF. The way the numbers will all play out in practice, we are anticipating about $70 million actually being gotten out the door in terms of the grants that you all would want to get. So I just wanted to get that out there. I also want to mention on the next slide, another EPA program. I know in some states this has been more used for some of the brownfield type activities than in others, but EPA's Clean Water and Drinking Water State Revolving Funds may be a resource in some cases if you've got a project that links to water somehow. These funds are capitalized by EPA each year. The states have them set up. The EPA provides money through its appropriation to those state programs. It's important for you to know that the states set the RLF priorities, the specific priorities, within broad EPA guidelines. Individuals and nonprofits may access these loans, and they can finance projects for up to 20 years and do a number of things, including brownfield mitigation. Again, you need to show the water connection, but it couldn't be a useful source of resources for you. Eligible activities include site assessment, disposal of underground storage tanks, disposal of contaminated soil or sediments. So if you're thinking about those implementation projects, and there may be if there's a water connection that includes some of these kinds of things, it may be a useful resource to consider. If we can go on to the next slide, just some of the things you should be aware of, again, the funding wrinkles and some of the reality check. As I mentioned, the states set the priorities and they determine the recipients, so you really need to work closely with your state. For fiscal year 2012, 10% minimum of the clean water funds must be used for green infrastructure or low impact or innovative environmental projects, which may give you a window to work something through. This is down in the last couple of years. That percentage was 20%. And also what's different this year is that you know, the last couple of years, the drinking water funds as well had the 20% minimum, and this year, the appropriation language just states that the green infrastructure and those kind of nifty things are done at the state's discretion. So again, you'll want to work very closely with your state on that. Just one thing to remember, the Water Office here at EPA has been working over the last year to develop strategies for green infrastructure financing, and those are anticipated to be released sometime this year. And if people are interested in trying to figure out what some of those might be, I think we would be happy to try to see what we could find out for you on that. In terms of funding for fiscal year 2012, the Clean Water Revolving Loan Fund has gotten a hair under $1.5 billion for capitalization grants, $919 million for a Drinking Water Revolving Loan Fund capitalization grants. Again, all of this funding goes to the states who redistribute it to local communities according to their own priorities.
Charlie, I actually have a question.
Sure.
Are there, because it goes through the states, is there any kind of, like, scale or typical amount of funding that the project can receive, or is it just whatever the state will?
Yeah, it is whatever, and typically the states will, the states may specify their own, you know,
okay,
maximums.
Mm-hmm.
I know the projects that I'm familiar with, you know, that have used this for brownfield-related purposes, you know, like, you know, a groundwater cleanup in conjunction with, you know, something that might leach into a river or something like that. It can, it, you know, they often can be $1 million or more.
Okay.
So it really depends on the project and how the state chooses to distribute its funds. But that's a
great
good question,
yeah,
given some of the size issues of cleanups that we've talked about, you know, in some of these projects.
Great. Are there any other questions on the line about the EPA programs that Charlie mentioned? Okay.
On the next slide, we're going to shift to HUD, and the major program I want to talk about is the Community Development Block Grant Program. We've talked about this on previous webinars. And I'll just mention that entitlement cities get a formula-based annual grant from HUD directly. Smaller communities, typically those with less than 50,000 people, get a share of the funds that HUD gives to states to distribute to small cities, and the states set their own priorities, you know, as to what they look for. And in recent years, typically those have focused on, you know, housing, infrastructure, and economic development. Again, so not brownfield specific, but clearly the kinds of projects that could be folded into a brownfield use. If we don't want to go on to the next slide, in terms of some of the funding wrinkles, this is an important, there's a couple of important things here. When you're dealing with the...
Yeah. I'm so sorry to interrupt. I had a question that came in online.
Sure.
They were asking, this is coming from Washington State, and they'd like to ask if you could mention if any portions of the grant programs have tribes set aside or have a tribal set aside.
Oh, sure. You know what, and I will be happy to follow up with that later if I don't get to all of that. But I can tell you, I'm going to get to the one on the block grant, and if when we get to, on the block grant, if you've got the slide up there, that last bullet that says an additional $360 million, about $60 million of that is reserved for you know, tribal CDBG. They compete through their own process, and I'd be happy to try to, you know, help the tribal grantee with any questions on that specifically.
Okay.
If they want to get in touch, because I think that's important. The tribal is, I mean, the CDBG is really the one program that we're focusing on that has a tribal-specific component to it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. In context of the CDBG, the projects are locally determined. I mean, they only need to meet one of HUD's three basic criteria, and after that it's really locally determined, so you really need to work through your local government recipient. There's a lot of competition for these funds, and if we'll get down to the numbers, that competition is really going to be increased in FY12. And the primary benefit is low and moderate income benefit. HUD requires 70% of its CDBG funds to be used for that purpose. In the past, brownfield projects have often had very little problem meeting that because so many of those projects are done in distressed areas. But getting into the numbers, I think the critical thing you need to know is that the CDBG program took a hit this year, close to $600 million. And what that is going to translate into is a 10 to 20% funding cut for each entitlement grantee and for the likely for most of the state totals as well. So that's an important thing to remember. Total formula grant funding that will be divided is $2.95 billion this year, and there's an additional $360 million for other purposes, and that's where the tribal resources come out of. I do want to mention a couple of the other HUD programs because we've talked about them before. The HUD Section 108 Loan Guarantee Program, which allows jurisdictions to apply for up to five times their annual entitlement for loan guarantees for CDBG-related activities. And then also HUD Sustainable Communities Challenge Grants and Implementation Grants, which were a key piece of the Sustainability Partnership. And then also HUD's Brownfield Redevelopment Grants. Again, these kind of these grants can be used to cover the full range of brownfield site reuse and development and implementation needs, as long as they're consistent with HUD objectives. But if we can go on to the next slide, there's a couple things that you need to know on this. The Section 108 loan guarantees are typically used for infrastructure and site preparation. They can be really vital, especially in bigger projects. The key thing is here is that they need to be repaid, and typically communities won't pledge their block grant resources without a project that can demonstrate some repayment. One of the issues with small cities is that the states are required to pledge the state CDBG, and pretty much all of them don't like to do that, and there's been only a handful of small city 108s done in the 30 years the program's been around. So in practice, there's a pretty severe constraint on how states can access this program. In terms of funding for fiscal year 2012, the Section 108 program got a little less than $6 million appropriation, which will support $240 million in Section 108 loan guarantees. This is only slightly down from this year, and I think probably a real victory for this program. But it's also, what is important and what's unfortunate is that the HUD sustainability grants, the challenge grants, the implementation grants, got no funding at all for FY 2012, so HUD will not be doing a funding round for grants this year. Congress did allow the sustainability office to continue, and it's my understanding they're going to try to do some technical assistance and some very sort of small-scale things, but their grant funding for 12 is not there, and Congress also did not provide any funding for the HUD Brownfields program. So those two tools are just out for this year. And then the third agency that's part, actually, does anybody have any questions on HUD before we move on?
Hi, Charlie?
Yeah.
This is Drew with Ironbound Community Corporation in Newark. I was wondering, with Choice Neighborhoods, I saw their NOFA has been released for implementation grants. Is there going to be a planning round too?
Well, I'm going to get to Choice in a little while, and I'll...
Oh, I'm sorry. I knew it was...
But the NOFA is out. You are right about that.
Just for implementation, though, right?
It is for implementation.
Okay. Is planning right. coming?
Or you well, you know, I mean, I read through it very briefly, and it sort of was my impression that, you know, that you might be able to, I don't know how to say, I always get myself in trouble with my terminology, but I'll say it anyway. You may be able to disguise some of the planning components as part of the implementation project and somehow then work them in, but it's not a planning focus. It's not going to be like the Sustainability Communities Planning Grant.
I know there, in past years with Choice, there's been both planning and implementation NOFAs.
And as far as I know, well, this year the one NOFA is out, and for next year the appropriations language really didn't focus on planning at all for FY12.
Gotcha.
But again, that's a good question. I'll write that down and I'll check that and I'll get back to you because I don't want to give bad information, but it was my impression, like I said, that the planning was sort of scaled back, and we can find that out for sure.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And I'll touch back on that in a minute, but in a few minutes. But the third agency that's part of the sustainability partnership is DOT. And this is an important program if you have any connection to transportation because there's a lot of money here. There's some challenges, but there is resources. And there's surface transportation formula grants, which can, in addition to do roads and highways and bridges, can also finance congestion mitigation and enhancement projects. And it's under that heading, really, that you can do things like, you know, bicycle and pedestrian facilities. You can, you know, if you're going to, you know, reuse a transportation structure, and, you know, you can rehabilitate it. So you've got some wiggle room through this piece of the program. Our transit construction and operation grants deal with transit, and there's some great examples in the past where things like, you know, bus barns and other things like that, you know, can be put on brownfield sites as part of larger, you know, implementation strategies and use these resources. And, of course, the Metropolitan Planning Organization planning grants. And, again, the brownfield potential, I mean, there are ways, and it's not easy in many cases, but there are ways to really creatively integrate the transportation pieces, into area-wide, you know, revitalization that uses abandoned or underused sites. A couple of wrinkles I want to mention on the next slide. Again, you know, the program resources are linked to transportation system and facility siting, so, you know, you're really focusing on that. And the communities must work through the state metropolitan planning organizations, the MPOs, or designated transportation agencies, and it's these MPOs that really determine the projects that are funded with the federal DOT money. Those projects need to fit within the MPO plan, and that planning process can take a long time. It's not uncommon for a project to take, you know, 7, 8, 10 years from the time it's first suggested to get it through the planning, to get it through the construction and implementation. So you need to be prepared to, you know, be patient, but it can be a great resource if you can get it in. One of the things that is good for fiscal year 2012 in terms of funding, the Tiger grants that I think some of the grantees have gotten, right?
Yes, we have a couple grantees who've had Tiger grants.
The budget this year is providing $500 million for FY12 Tiger grants. It's only a slight reduction from last year. And the appropriations language states that at least $120 million of that $500 has to go to rural projects. And I know we have some rural grantees, so there may be some, you know, something to keep in mind that rural set-aside is out there and it needs to be complied with.
This is Amy. I just want to also mention, because we sent this out in email to all the grantees, but take a look at that Tiger funding, because this year there is language in there which states that if your project is part of a robust community planning process, and they specifically mention such as brownfield area-wide planning, that they'll be looking at those projects and seeing if there's a way to give preference to those communities. So that's a real important step, and we just hope that folks can, you know, take advantage of it. I know it's a lengthy application process, but work, like Charlie said, with your MPOs and see if there's a way, and make sure that the components that you're putting forward in your Tiger application that are part of your brownfields area-wide planning process, make sure it's really well documented in your application.
Okay. Thank you, Amy. That's a great point, that the preference and priority thing is something that could be very helpful as you're thinking about doing this. And then just on the next slide briefly, just a couple other pieces on the funding, just to give you some sense as to where the total came out for the Highway Trust Fund, a little over $39 billion, and Transit, $9.4 billion. I mean, these are the big chunks of money that are divided to the states that the MPOs work with. These amounts are a little less than last year, and they are contingent on if Congress actually passes a transportation bill this year. So the second set of agencies I want to talk about are a couple of agencies that aren't formal members of the Sustainability Partnership, but we certainly have worked with very closely, and I know a lot of brownfield project grantees have worked with very closely over the years, to kind of integrate these resources into brownfield reuse. And the first one is, you know, the Economic Development Administration, or EDA. They've got a number of programs, but three key ones that have that can have an important impact on brownfields: the Public Works Grants, which finance, you know, industrial site redevelopment, a lot of, you know, building reuse, infrastructure. The Economic Dislocation Program capitalizes revolving loan funds for distressed areas and may also be used to provide some other types of support. This focuses on areas of high unemployment or areas where there's been plant closings and other economic, in EDA's term, other economic dislocations. And then the third program is their planning program. The planning funds mostly go out through economic development districts, which primarily serve rural areas and small town areas. And the potential for these things, you know, these funds can be used to support a whole range of business-based job-promoting projects, and in smaller communities, some of the planning that's needed to make this happen. If we go on to the next slide, just to give you some sense as to some of the EDA wrinkles. EDA's funding, you know, like our funding here, you know, given the demand is pretty limited and there is significant competition for this funding, EDA accepts applications on a quarterly basis, and their approvals take place at the regional office level. And I think they're divided up into six regions. We'd be happy to get you regional contacts if you need it. It's important that you work closely with those regional office contacts because those are people that really, you know, if it gets through them, you have a pretty good chance of getting it through headquarters. EDA projects are really driven by job generating potential, and they do have a minimum dollars per job requirement that links with it. I believe that the current one is, I think it's $50,000 per job, $50,000 of EDA support per job created is the requirement. Unemployment is a key eligibility factor. You need to be over the national average, and a lot of the EDA resources focus on smaller towns and rural areas, and in fact, the congressional language directs EDA to not forget small towns. So a lot of their resources typically, you know, half to two-thirds in any given year goes to smaller towns. The funding for FY 2012, $220 million total for the public works, economic dislocation, and the planning grants, and there's some guarantees. Before I get into the specifics, I just want to point out that while I could not find any detail, but may be of interest if we can find something out, is that Congress is requiring EDA and FY 12 to spend $5 million for insourcing-related projects, and this is in... you know, this sort of is in line with the administration's approach, you know, to bring manufacturing jobs back and or to encourage manufacturing expansions in the U.S. for the kinds of activities that might otherwise have taken the jobs overseas. So once we find something out on that, I know given what, you know, some of you guys at least were focused on and some of the preliminary planning, this might be something to keep in mind. And there's also $10 million for guarantees authorized under the America Competes Act, but I need to find detail on that. That was none in the language. But to kind of get to the next slide, this kind of gets down to the bread and butter programs. For the public works in FY12, about $112 million, $29 million in planning, and $50 million in economic adjustment. These figures, the public works figure is down a little bit from FY11. The economic adjustment is a little up. So the EDA fared pretty well in the appropriations process this year. The next program I want to mention, oh, I'm sorry, are there any questions?
This is Amy. I think one thing with EDA that I've been learning is just the importance of, again, kind of working locally, not just as Charlie said with the regional EDA person, but also with your county or the agency that prepares the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, I believe it is, the SEDS, and making sure that your projects are part of that and prioritized within that. That can help open up some, you know, conversations and possible revenue streams. So just another thing to keep in mind.
Actually, Amy, that's a great point because when you approach your local EDA regional person, they're going to ask you that question. They're going to ask if it's in the SED. So thank you for bringing that up. That's an important thing to get out there.
And I just wanted to remind people, if you're on the phone, it's #6 to unmute your line. So if you have a question but couldn't hop off of mute, it's #6 to unmute and *6 to mute.
Hello, David Salkin here from the Sur in Puerto Rico.
Uh-huh. Go right ahead.
Hi, I had a question about the Tiger Grant. As a quasi-governmental organization, would quasi-governmental be able to apply for Tiger, or do we have to directly with MPO?
David, this is Amy. I'm pretty sure you're going to need to work with your MPO. From what I recall, looking over the eligibility, it was really just government agencies and the MPO. So we can check. I'm pretty sure I highlighted it in the email too, but I don't remember quasi-governmental being on that list.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. You're welcome.
And then just shifting to USDA, we've talked about USDA programs a couple of times over the last year. A great potential resource if you're a smaller community. There's community facility, utility loans, guarantees, and grants, that business and industry program, which can focus resources directly on private business activity, their intermediary relending program, and then the rural development grants, which, depending on which one you're looking for, can be are known as our bags or our bags. The great beauty of USDA programs is, they're very similar in sort of eligibility activity to block grant in the sense they can really be used to meet, a pretty full range of brownfield redevelopment needs and to finance some of the activities, that can complement brownfield reuse. So it's an important set of programs if you're a smaller community. And if we can go on to the next slide.
Before you go ahead, I had a question that came in online.
Sure.
This question's coming in from Maine, and they were asking, is it a possibility that the transportation and RDA could come to an agreement on the definition of rural? For example, transportation says 50,000 population and rural says 30,000.
Well, the way it was questioned was, is it possible? I think I'm going to answer it this way, though, that just given for a lot of bureaucratic-type reasons, program jurisdiction reasons, it's not likely that we will see that kind of change anytime soon.
Okay, thank you.
And we understand that, it's actually, not to take up a lot of time on the webinar, but, Amy and I have had meetings with some of the other agencies. We're really trying to, in our terminology, sort of align some of these requirements to make it, to make them more consistent. And it's very tough just given the different jurisdictional lines, actually both within the agencies and in Congress in terms of the appropriation. So there's a lot of water would have to be carried for that to happen. It's very interesting, even in the context of USDA, looking at that second bullet on the slide, because even within USDA itself, different programs have different population thresholds in terms of eligibility. And typically, for many of their programs, the smaller the community, the more competitive it is in the funding cycle. That first bullet is a critical one in the context of USDA funding. So many of the decisions on these program awards are made at the state office level. You really need to go and meet with your state office people and explain what you're doing, explain how, your brownfield, vision and projects really fits within their sort of context of rural development. It's really critical. In terms of funding, and I know I'm taking up a lot of time here, but in terms of funding, just to give you a quick run through, in terms of community facilities, this program did okay this year. For fiscal year 12, $1.3 billion for direct loans, $105 million for guaranteed loans, $11 million for grants. And within that grant, they're going to be doing some capacity building awards. So that's something to check out. I believe those capacity building awards are going to go to, I believe they can go to jurisdictions, and I know they can go to universities and consortia. And if anybody's interested in pursuing that, we will find more out on that. But I thought that was an interesting set aside within that program. In terms of the business and industry development, $822.9 million loan guarantee authority. This is down for FY11, but still a sizable amount of loan guarantee authority. the Our Bag and Our Baggage, you can see very small programs this year, especially the Rural Business Opportunity, the Our Bag grants, only $2.25 million nationally. There's also about $18 million in rural development loans that come through a program which I'm not quite clear on. And then the Rural Electrification Administration has $33 million. If you're in an area that applies to, they've got funds this year that they are supposed to put into economic development and job creation projects. Again, if anyone has any interest in that, we can try to find out more on that. But that was one that popped up this year as well. I'm just kind of carrying on a little more because there's a number of programs. The energy program, the REAP program, a little over $6.5 million in loans, $1.7 million in grants. And then the other program I want to mention, because it's sizable, the Rural Water, Wastewater Disposal and Solid Waste Programs, and I know that Amy had someone on from this program when we did the webinar, $513 million total within that program to cover, you know, a range of water, waste, and disposal activities. This may be a harder fit to brownfields, but depending on what you're doing, it could potentially be a good infrastructure support program to think about. And going back to that earlier question, this one does include a $66.5 million set-aside for tribes within that program. And from a technical assistance standpoint, I also want to point out those last two things. Some technical assistance grants, not to communities, but to TA providers, so you may have a chance to tap into that. And it also authorizes money for a circuit rider technical assistance program. So as you need TA, in the context of any of these water and waste issues, there may be some resources that you can call on, and I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that in the smaller communities.
Charlie, before we move on to from USDA, I just had a question. A lot of our projects are looking at doing some kind of community garden or urban ag. Have you heard of anything available from USDA along those lines that would not be specific to rural development?
No. I have not heard of anything specific related to urban ag, but in a minute I'm going to talk about something that could potentially be helpful.
Cool. Okay. We just heard someone here just said that there might be a farmer's market program, so we'll look into that.
Yeah,
and
see what that entails. Cool. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Okay,
and just to catch everybody up, we are on slide 23.
Okay. And this is the last program I want to, the major program I want to mention before I'm using up all of Amy's time here. It's SBA, the Small Business Administration, and I wanted to get this into the mix because it's such a sizable amount of resources. Traditionally, SBA hasn't quite made the connection to what we're doing, and primarily the reason for that is so much of the resources are really delegated to private banks and other institutions, nonprofit institutions. And so really probably sort of the biggest barrier for many people to try to access that is just that information and that linkage. But I want to mention these so you have some sense as to what's out there. SBA is what they call their Section 7A program, provides guaranteed loans directly to private businesses, and eligible activities that can be guaranteed include land and buildings and site improvements. So there may be some opportunities for connection there. One of the programs that really excites me, and in fact I should mention that Maddie has asked me to reach out to SBA to see how the heck we can get connected better. That was my work assignment, by the way. The Community Development Corporation program, also known as Section 504, provides loan guarantees to private nonprofit community development corporations, which can be actually a very useful source of access to capital. The other two programs I put up there, I'm not going to mention them because they really focus on a pretty narrow sliver. The Small Business Investment Company and the Trust Certificate Guarantee Program provide resources to support venture capital investment. So in some cases, if part of your ideas, visions, or plans may include, you know, some business startups, you know, some innovative technology type business startups, you know, any kind of a new enterprise, this may be a tool, and I'd be happy to, work with you, offline in a specific case to see if it would fit, but I wanted to mention them up there. Again, the whole idea of this, the SBA programs are intended to reduce private sector risk associated with small business development. This does include facility preparation-related needs, and I think really our, certainly my goal and certainly our challenge is to try to figure out how to close the circle between, the banks and lenders and their perceived risks of dealing with brownfields and the realities of all this. So that's where we want to go with that. Just if we can go on to the next slide, some of the rigors. Pretty much all of their programs operate as guarantees of private financing, and very much of the actual project decision-making is delegated to private lenders. Typically, in their jargon, they're certified lenders. Many of these, I know, do not understand voluntary cleanup programs. They don't understand some of these processes. And so that's, again, really the challenge.
Petra, the one that Petra has.
I'm sorry? I'm sorry, I lost.
Just a reminder, somebody might not have themselves on mute. So just if you are on the phone lines, unless you have a comment, please keep your call on mute. You can use your own mute button or hit *6 to mute your line. Thank you.
Yep.
Oh, okay. We'll carry on here. I do want to mention that, that like any bank, they have a limited tolerance for loss, but any small business development project activity is eligible for SBA. I mean, their stuff is pretty much limited by the size of the business and the project, which is actually, in practice, very generous. So this is something to think about, and if anybody is interested or they've run into problems, Amy and I would really like to really kind of work with this more, and this would be very helpful. But this is what I wanted to really get at, the sense of scale of this program. Congress increased the SBA authorities pretty much across the board for fiscal year 2012. That is billion with a B, $17.5 billion are authorized for guaranteed loans under the 7A program for next year. And if you go on to the next slide, $7.5 billion in loan guarantee commitments through the Section 504 Community Development Corporation program. So we're talking a real program here, which is why we're very interested in supporting this. And I think with that, I think I'll see if anybody has any questions. Like I said, the SBIC and the other big numbers, but more limited application. Okay. All right. Just a couple more slides. And we actually have touched on some of these. We identified these six agencies, because they've been frequently used. They have a lot of resources. There's other things out there that, depending on what you're going to do, might be of help. And we wanted to get these out there. And as I mentioned, we'd be glad to work with you one-on-one, to get you more information, to see if we can make some connections for you, because we think it's important to reach out to any federal partner that can work in these implementation ideas. Someone asked earlier about the HUD Choice Neighborhoods Initiative. That initiative got $120 million this year. It focuses on a whole range of community development, community betterment, vacant property to housing, things like this. A lot of it is tied with basic community services, so that's the connection you need to make. You should also note that the appropriation requires $80 million of that $120 million to be awarded to public housing authorities. That may be a limiting factor, or it may alert you to a potential partnership that you might strike with a housing authority, depending on what you want to do. It was also interesting to me, too, that the appropriations language that was in the congressional bill requires consultation with EPA to coordinate and leverage federal resources as part of the HUD Choice Neighborhoods Initiative. So I don't know what that's going to mean in practice, but it's in there. And to me, that gives an entree for us to kind of try to see what might fit. Another program I want to mention, again, more limited use, but if you're going to do anything, related to affordable housing, HUD's Home Investment Partnership Program, $1 billion this year. It's allocated by formula to state jurisdictions and others who sort of oversee the construction of the housing. The Appalachian Regional Commission, this year, $68 million. to be used for road and economic development projects in Appalachian states. And the last one I want to mention, because this actually kind of fits with the earlier question, the Community Development Financial Institutions Program, CDFI, based out of Treasury, does a number of things. I mean, they oversee the New Markets Tax Credit Program, but they also have funding which they use for a range of community-based projects that are carried out through different lender organizations. And I must have been telepathic with that questioner earlier, but I put this in because one of the things that Congress set aside this year is up to $22 million of that is reserved for a healthy food financing initiative. There's not a lot of detail in that. Some of that is going to focus on suppliers. Some of that's going to focus on markets. I mean, it could very well be used, I think, for, I mean, farmers. I mean, I think it's pretty broad, and we can check if that's of interest to folks, but they actually set that aside specifically this year through the CDFI funding initiative, so I wanted to mention that. Let me just do the last slide, and then we'll see if there's any questions. This is not appropriations, but I'd like to make sure people keep this in the back of their minds as they're thinking about financing, because tax credits, tax incentives can very often play an important role in attracting resources, attracting capital to projects, and they can fit very nicely with the traditional, you know, appropriated funding program. Rehabilitation tax credits, no cap on these. You just need to meet the State Historic Preservation Office and federal requirements. Great projects, great successes in brownfields with this. Low-income housing tax credits, $3.5 billion annually allocated to states. That will be true again this year. New markets tax credits, $3.5 billion was allocated last February. Very little of that has actually made it to the street in the form of projects. I did a check, and I think virtually every state that's got an area-wide grantee in it, also at least one allocatee identified that state as an area where they want to do business, and we'd be happy to make some linkages there. And it's not an easy program. I'm sorry, I forget the guy from Puerto Rico. We've talked about this before. It's not easy. But, you know, to the extent it can work. One thing also to remember on new markets is past allocations. They expire after 5 years, and so I tell people one of the best things you can do is find a nervous allocatee who's going to lose his allocation and then bring your project to them, because sometimes they talk a little... Sometimes they're a little more flexible in their consideration when they're going to lose it.
And,
so,
and Charlie, we had talked about doing a separate webinar for just to talk about new markets tax credits. So once we pull that together, we'll let folks
know. And energy efficiency and renewable energy tax credits, most of those are still available through the end of 2013. Some go a little further. And then our poor beleaguered brownfield cleanup expensing tax incentive. I don't know if that's a technical legal term or not, but it is on hiatus. That's more of a TV summer rerun term. But the brownfield expensing incentive lapsed December 31st. It is in the extender tax package that's currently before Congress. And if that passes, and if we don't know for sure if that will or not, but if that passes, it will be retroactive to January 1st, and it will be in effect through the end of 2013. That's something, as we hear about, we will keep you posted. It can be a very good incentive to help encourage private entities to do cleanups because of the way they can recover those cleanup costs. And with that, I'll see if there's any last questions, because I think I've run way over. I told Amy I could do this in 45 minutes. What was I thinking?
Yeah, we are running a little short on time. We promised you guys we'd keep it to an hour. The webinar is actually scheduled to 2:45, so folks can stay a little bit longer. If there are questions, we can stay for till 2:45. So is there any quick questions for Charlie? Okay, great. Charlie, thank you so much. This is really helpful. It's a great update. Now everyone, please get to slide 28. I'm going to turn this over to Clark Henry from SRA in a minute, who is going to go through the spreadsheet, but also at this point pull up that Brownfield Area-Wide Planning Federal Resources Tool. Basically what we want to do is take the information, not just what Charlie went over, but some other programs that are out there at the federal level, and present those to you in a way where you can, you know, find what you're looking for in terms of program scale, eligibility, other types of program information pieces. And this is something that we've started preparing here with the help of SRA. And before we get any further on it, we are looking for your feedback. So, Clark, let me turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Amy. Welcome, everybody. I'll try to make this fast and be respectful of your time. So essentially, you know, we've heard a lot of feedback, both myself. I'm, again, with SRA International. We're a contractor for EPA, and we do a lot of work for the Brownfield office. We've heard a lot about, and EPA has as well, about the number of resources and guides and tables that are out there that point you to federal resources are either, one, they're kind of onerous to figure out which is what resources are appropriate for what you're looking to do, and then, two, they might not be complete enough with enough agencies that are in the complete federal arsenal of resources. So we were trying to create a hybrid here, and what we'd like in is to get your feedback, if you have any at this point, on what we have so far in draft form. I guess, you know, the caveats here is that this is very much a draft, what you can download off the Kluwin website, very much a draft, but we wanted to get your feedback before fully populating everything and refining the search functions on the spreadsheet. So I guess you can go to, so we want to give you something useful that you can identify and evaluate whether a resource is going to be useful for you or not, to the extent that we can do that with a spreadsheet. If you go to the next slide on 29, you'll see the list of agencies or offices, departments that within the federal government that we have listed within the spreadsheet. Each one of these, say, at EPA, we have a couple of different offices. Within the Department of Commerce, there are different programs or offices that we're including in the spreadsheet. So we're trying to be comprehensive of all the applicable resources that are going to be available to you, whether this is through application for grants, loans, tax incentives, et cetera. And what we've done within the spreadsheet is separate out a few things. We want to make something searchable for you so you're not just inundated with tons of reading, not knowing whether this is something that you're eligible for or something that's going to be applicable or speaks to the goals that you have within your area-wide plans. So you'll see we have listed the agency name, the type of grant we have, or type of resource, the function of the resource, eligibility criteria, size of the resource. We also have it separated to see whether or not you are specific, looking for resources that are specific for rural communities. Another overarching theme within the spreadsheet is that you'll notice that very few of these resources have brownfield in their title or listed goals within the resource. So the assumption is that unless it's saying that brownfield work is prohibited, that it is a viable implementation resource for you to, on your brownfield projects. And we found this to be true over the many years that when we're looking for brownfield resources, the bulk of what's out there really doesn't have brownfield specific criteria. So if you open up the spreadsheet, see, we have a basic instructions tab that will be elaborated upon and be much more user-friendly once we move through the spreadsheet and populate it and refine the search functions. The second tab are core resources. We've kind of identified through some back and forth with our, between ourselves and EPA, resources that are going to be more mainstream for you. And then the third tab are related resources, those that might not be as directly applicable for most people. Search results tab and the definitions tab where we talk about what the agency definition is, a program name, where it describes our typology, the function, and so forth. So you'll look through this and you'll notice the list of the resources, but I think the main feature here that we've not seen before is the searchability of all these resources. But mostly, columns D and E, the type and function of the resource. There are two ways to search through the spreadsheet. You'll notice the drop-down boxes in row 3, where you can select all or deselect and then selectively click boxes looking for grants, say, within column D. be the type of resource you look for, grants or grant loan combinations, technical assistance, etc. Once you make your selection and hit OK, it'll automatically filter out all those that don't meet that criteria. And you can search PI for multiple functions as well. So if you look for grants and loans, and then you look for, then go to the following column, E, and look at infrastructure, a loan, it'll bring up those that have a grant loan combination for infrastructure. And if you clear all those results, there's also one other way to search the spreadsheet, which is probably going to be the most directly applicable for you, which is to go to the search button on the very top left, and a dialog box comes up. So within the instructions, there will be some instructions about how to limit the words that you're using to search for. But if you search in, say, grant within that dialog box, it'll bring up 28 results of different grants across multiple federal agencies. And you'll see those results in the fourth tab, the search results tab. And to clear, you just simply hit clear results. That is basically it. We could go in, of course, in much more detail. But we're in the draft form here, and we'd love to hear your comments and feedback about how useful this tool is going to be for you, whether you feel that this is going to be comprehensive enough in terms of the agencies or the resources that we're listing. And also, primary concern to us is whether the function of the search is something that you're going to find useful.
Thanks, Clark. That was perfect. Yes, feedback from the group.
Amy, this is Jean. We had a couple of comments and questions that came in regarding this form online, and if it's okay, I'll just go through a few of them because there's just a couple simple ones. The first one is a question coming in from Maine, and they're asking if they're supposed to have access to the spreadsheet. And it's helpful if you have access to the spreadsheet. This is the file that I mentioned in your reminder email. There was bold text telling you that they wanted you to have access to this file and gave you the direct link to download it. It was also what I commented on when we started today's seminar and we kind of mentioned it. It's available on the links page for the event. So from the seminar homepage where you registered to participate today, on the left side, there's a button that says link. And if you click on that, that page will give you a listing of things to download, including the slides, and then one of those is a Brownfield resource tool download, and it's an Excel file. So you don't have to have it open right now. You can start to look at it later on and provide comments. We'll talk about how to submit those comments in a moment. But, you know, they weren't doing a live demo. They were just kind of talking through the spreadsheet for those that could open it up. I did have a comment that came in anonymously online that was asking if the spreadsheet will be turned into a web-based tool. They think it would be easier to use it as a web page rather than a searchable spreadsheet.
Okay, Jean, thanks. We've been talking about that, and, you know, that kind of depends on, in part, as far as how many resources we put into this, and it really depends on what communities, the area-wide planning communities, the value in this that they're finding. So, you know, the search and the spreadsheet format, that's, you know, more of the lower resources that we're putting into this that just will get this started, and we definitely expect this to be a work in progress. Translating it into a web-based tool probably would be really nice, but we just need to understand the utility of this first before making that investment.
Okay. We had another question that came in from California. Or it's more of an idea, not a question about the tool. And they suggested adding a few examples from AWP or other Brownfield recipients who have used some of these funds and what they used it for, along with the point of contact. And they suggested that maybe you could ask them who has successfully used or not successfully used some of these resources that are in contact Clark to give them kind of anecdotal or case study information.
Okay, that's great. Charlie actually just mentioned to me he has a lot of examples. And as far as, like, AWP-specific communities, you know, I think that's a dialogue that we'll have to have amongst all the grantees. And we'd be happy to provide opportunities for the grantees to share their experiences using these types of tools. So that's something we'll think about. Thank you. Okay, other questions or ideas? Okay, just curious. I need some feedback from all of you on the line. To what degree do you think you'll find this helpful and useful?
If you're on the phone, go ahead and just unmute. You can hit #6 to unmute and respond verbally. Or electronically. Type of a question at any time.
Thanks, Jean. Yeah, we really want to hear from you as to, do you already have access to this information in different ways? Or would be trying to compile it be really useful to you? What do folks think?
Amy, it's David from Buzzword.
Hi, David.
I find that the information that's available here on the spreadsheet to be extremely helpful in making a sort of a very high-level, quick determination for doing deeper investigation into the realities of the granting or loan opportunity. So I want to say thank you.
Okay, good. That's helpful. I think that's exactly what we wanted it to be. If you're looking for loans, you can search for loans and see your options that way. If you're looking for grants, you can do it a separate way. Nonprofit eligibility, in your case, David, or whoever you want to work with. So that is kind of where we're headed with this. Thanks. Other thoughts?
Amy?
Yes.
This is Stacey Erickson in Region A. I think it's a really good idea. I think particularly in our region, some of our bigger towns tend to get most of this information and are pretty tuned in, but particularly some of the smaller ones don't have the same amount of staff and maybe don't have the same sorts of resources. And I know that when we have our Western Brownfields Conference, I've given some presentations in the past on federal resources that can be used, and ones that we actually used in Denver, in order to redevelop brownfield sites. And people always, I think particularly people also like to hear just examples of where it's been done and how they used them and not just the types of things that are available.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's really helpful. Stacey, you reminded me of something else that we might not do here from headquarters, but if we have this spreadsheet, once we get it shaped up, then it is something that we thought regions and states could maybe build upon and enter in more local information, and add that to the search function. So, and then the examples piece is very useful. We'll have to look at that. Thank you. Other thoughts? Particularly if there's something that you see in the in the spreadsheet as it is now, that if there's like another column of information that you think would be a good fit here or something that you're not quite sure of.
One column that you don't see here that we are going to be adding is kind of a little special notes column, just little tips or some, advice kind of that we've been able to glean from other resources. To the extent that would be helpful, too.
That's right. I think a lot of that, too, will be some of the tips that Charlie went through today in his reality check.
Right.
Okay. Okay, any other thoughts from folks on this?
Amy, Mario Leone, Borough of Manassa, Pennsylvania. I just want to concur with the other two callers. I think it's an excellent tool and will be a great benefit.
Help you guys sort through the programs and get started. Okay, that's good. Thank you. Okay. Well, as Clark said, this is in draft form. We haven't populated everything yet. We took a lot of the information that we had ready access to, and that's what you see in here now. But we did want to add the rest of the information and, have it be something that we get out to you guys for your use. So take a look at it, and we'll be working on it over the next several weeks. And as you have comments or ideas, please let me know. It's not that we can't change something later, but we really just want to, this is really for your use and your benefit, so we really want to have it meet your needs. And you all have my phone number, so you can definitely give me a call. We can talk about it. Okay. Are there any other questions or ideas on the line before we wrap up the webinar? I apologize that we ran over time. Okay. Well, we want to thank everyone for your time today. And, Jean, I know you have some final comments for the group. But for me, thank you very much.
And me, too. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Great. Thank you all so very much. As Amy said, we're going to go ahead and officially close things out. But before everyone disconnects today, there's a couple of very important reminders I want to provide you. So I'm going to ask everyone to move along to slide number 31, which is the final slide in today's presentation materials titled Resources and Feedback. On slide 31, if you're looking at it electronically, you'll see two links. One of them is a link to the additional resources page, which is that same link page we've been referencing throughout the presentation where you can find and download a copy of that Excel file that Clark talked about earlier and that Amy's hoping to get feedback on. I will also send an email to everyone today, again, with a direct link when we're done today to that Excel file. So if you didn't get a chance to pull it up live or you'd like to look at it a little bit more closely, you'll have that chance and you can contact our organizers directly with any thoughts or feedback you might have on that tool. The other link you'll find on that slide is our feedback form link. It takes about 2 minutes to fill out. It's just a very short form to let us know what you thought of today's session. It's very important for our organizers as well as staff like myself that help run through in that you let us know what you thought of the session. If you'd like to continue to have free training opportunities delivered this way, please let us know. It's through your feedback that we are able to continue to deliver stuff like this. If you're looking for confirmation or verification of your participation today, the only confirmation you can get is offered after you give feedback. So when you fill out the feedback form, you'll have an option to check a box, have a confirmation email sent to you for your own record. So if you're looking for credits or keeping training logs, you definitely want to check that box and fill out the feedback form. As I mentioned, if the organizers are okay with it, if we can release the archive of the training, you'll automatically get an email with information on how to replay or access the resources from today's session once they're available. Those are the end of the official reminders I have. So, again, I would also like to echo my thanks to all of the participants who made time to join us today, as well as all of the organizers who put together today's presentation materials and worked with us to get today's seminar out there. I appreciate everybody's patience with us as we kind of put this one together for them. So hopefully you found today to be a helpful and useful expenditure of your time today. And if you are interested in more, you're welcome to join us on future free online training through Kluin. So simply go to kluin.org and click on the links for our training. You can sign up for our free training offered throughout the month. So again, thank you all very much, and this will be the formal conclusion for today's session. Thanks, and have a great day.